So anyway, we're gonna be talking about having a messy life. When you hear the phrase messy life, what do you think of?
This week.
This week? Why was this week messy?
Well, the water heater leaked. The printer broke. I went up to get my treatment in Orlando and they wouldn't give it to me, so I drove all the way up here and back for nothing. Elaine had surgery on Wednesday. My to-do list, instead of that long, is about that long. It's been a week.
Okay. A messy, anybody else have a messy week? We've had a messy 2 weeks because we wanted to paint, actually, Mary, this is me, okay? This is all my fault, okay? This has nothing to do with Marianne. Marianne just looked at the baseboard, you know what the baseboard is, the wood that goes along the floor. It says, that needs to be freshened up. So I think I should paint. She said about herself that she was going to paint it. And I said, oh, honey, let me take care of that for you. I'll hire somebody to do that. And so that's how the project started. And they came, don't laugh at me. And so they came in and I said, yeah. Oh, and you know, we gotta do the doors. And by the way, I really don't like these doors. Do you mind if we switch them out and get different doors? You know, oh, and the folding doors to the my closet, yeah, let's change those too. Oh, you gotta paint those, yeah. Well, you know, the ceiling, you know, it's got popcorn in it. No, we changed our mind. We're gonna leave it up. So we just painted that. And oh, the walls, yeah, paint that. Oh, and you know what? The grout in the shower, it's got a hole in it. Can you fix that? Oh, well, maybe you just re-grout the whole thing. And then there's the floor with the tile. Yeah, why don't you re-grout that too? And oh, you're going to be here. Why don't you spray paint the ceiling in the garage? So that's all right. You can laugh at me. You can laugh at me. I'm a target. I got a target painted on me. So anyway, you know, and now we are in 2 weeks. And they were supposed to come Thursday. Well, one of them is sick. They were going to come today. I just got a text message. The other guy is sick. And so they're supposed to come tomorrow. So life is messy. And sometimes messy looks like this. Have you ever been in a house like this or a room like this? I'm sorry?
My friend Bonnie and George.
Okay. Your friends? Maybe a parent?
It's like our house.
Looks like somebody's painting and moved everything.
Okay. My aunt, who is 96, is now went under hospice care, and so they brought in a hospital bed. It took them hours to carve out some space to squeeze the hospital bed in, but there's nowhere to sit in the room. You can stand around like by the door. So you know, my life is not messy like this. I'm pretty clean. I put things away. But my life is messy like this. My brain is a disaster. Okay, thoughts running. Somebody once described my brain as a train wreck. Okay, you know what happens with a train wreck?
First car hits and then the second one goes, the third and the fourth.
It just goes and goes. And where does all that stuff go? Everywhere. And so, you know, life, my brain is like, you know, I'm going to concentrate. Who am I fooling? You know, I can't concentrate. I'm forever being distracted. And, you know, I don't know what kind of life you have, but I suspect you have some element, some carved out corner is messy. And maybe your messy life is like this.
Tri-tide power rods with 85% more tide in every pod.
Who needs that much more tide?
Oh, my God.
to me more time.
You are.
Yes, you are.
Going outside?
More light.
More time.
More sun.
More adorable.
More viral.
You're all gonna need.
You're gonna need more time.
It's a mess out there.
And I think what he says is, you know, it's a mess out there. You know, it really is. And you think, well, you know, my life is somewhat messy or more messy or less messy than other people. But God really doesn't understand that. Because, you know, God is perfect. So how can he understand me and my messy life? Well, I'm here to tell you, and for us to look, is that Jesus walked where it was messy. And I'm going to tell you something that I'm, you know, if the door is open, okay? So if you want to walk out, I'm not going to stop you. I'm not going to trip you. But I'm going to ask you to hold on to your questions, because I'm going to tell you something that I think is true, but we don't think it. That Jesus' life was messy. Jesus lived a messy life. Now you say, Chad, how can you say that? Well, part of it is because when he came, we're told he came as what? He came as our great high priest, right? And you think, oh, well, you see, Chad, great high priest. Priests are what? Perfect. You know, they can't have any sin. You know, we have a great high priest who has ascended into heaven. You see, Chet? It's perfect. He doesn't understand. And so he says, so we hold firmly to the faith we profess. We hold on to it. Why? Goes on to say, for we don't have a high priest who is unable to do what? Empathize. What does it mean to empathize?
To understand.
To feel with, to be in the same circle with you.
Compassion.
Compassion. That Jesus gets it. You know, there's this commercial that was on the Super Bowl about he gets us. Mm-hmm. He does. He, our great high priest, he felt it. And he felt it because he has been tempted. How?
Every way.
Every which way. It doesn't matter what problem, what mess you step into, or sometimes messes get thrown on you. You know, it does happen here, but not like up north, where when it snows and there's that slush, you know, it doesn't go down through the drain and the cars go by, right? Right? Sometimes life, the mess of life gets thrown on you.
Then you need Tide.
There you go. There you need Tide. You see, and yet he didn't sin. And some people say, you see, I told you Jesus didn't sin, so he really didn't feel it. No, he felt it more because he was perfect. Think about this. Have you ever cut your finger? Have you ever poked your finger in your eye? Which one hurts worse?
Depends.
It depends. Okay, a paper cut. But what about you poke, when you get poked in the eye, that hurts. Why? Because you are more sensitive. You've got more nerve endings. It's like, there are different spots on your body that have more nerve endings. They're more sensitive. And because Jesus was sinless, he felt the messiness of life even more than we do. Because he was perfect, and yet all of this stuff was all around him. And he felt it. He understands. Think about, so we're going to look at the messiness of Jesus' life. You know, this is one of these string balls, you know. You know, it's a mess. Jesus' life was messy. And you're going to say, prove it to me. Well, think about his birth. Well, first of all, think about the fact that, okay, you say, well, he wasn't a messy life because look at what he did. How can you say he walked on water? You know, he stopped the wind, he fed people. You know, he paid tax. Wouldn't you like to have this one, to have your taxes paid by money that came out of a fish? That sounds pretty good, right? You think the IRS would accept that? Oh, I'm waiting to catch that fish. No, we're gonna audit you. So, you know, and he raised people from the dead. You see, he didn't understand. But then look at his birth. Think about his birth. Who was his mother? And what was she? An unwed teenager. That sounds like a messy start, right?
Yes.
And it wasn't that she had sex out of marriage. So when Joseph hears about it, guess what?
He assumes she did.
He assumes, and he says those three magic words, I'm out of here. Right? He was going to release her. You know, and but God speaks to both of them. They go through it. They have the baby not in a hospital, not in a nursery place, not even in, people have them in bathtubs. It was in a dirty, stinky stall where there were animals and animal stuff all over the place. Doesn't sound like the place you want to have a baby, ladies, does it? No. And then what happens? Herod hears all about this and says, we're going to get him, we're going to kill him. And so what do? They run in the middle of the night to a foreign place. Don't know the culture, don't know the language. That sounds like a messy start of life.
Yes.
I mean, for us, for our first daughter, Miriam was going to have a planned cesarean. And so we, you know, it was all planned, and she went in the hospital the night before, and I was at home painting and stuff. And I get a call from my mother-in-law. She says, you better get over to the hospital. You're going to be a father tonight. And so I was like, okay. So I went in and found Marianne. And she's laying there. Well, she's got the little thing on her hair, you know, holding it back. She's like, ha, 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 I'm having a baby. And so, you know, she had her dinner. And she had a little indigestion. Just a little indigestion, you know. They gave her pork and sauerkraut. Oh, I don't know what's wrong with these people, but anyway, she has her little meal, and she's got a little upset stomach. Nothing unusual when you eat pork and sauerkraut, right? So anyway, she tells somebody, and they send in an intern. They say, well, we better check you out just to be, you know, and I need to practice anyway. So, you know, she gets up and he looks in her, and these are his words, oh my golly. She had dilated, baby's ready to crown. You know, so they, you know, rush her in, I'm there, and, you know, all of our plans, right, gone. It's a mess. It's messy. And not only was Jesus' birth messy, his life as a teenager was messy. Did any of you have messy lives as teenagers? Did any of you cause any messes in your family? You sort of get it? Did you think you were misunderstood?
Of course.
Of course. And it wasn't your fault, was it?
No.
No. It was your parents' fault. Now, in some way, Jesus experienced this. Remember his story? He's 12. They go to Jerusalem for the Passover, and he stays behind. They go looking for him for 3 days, right? Remember the story? It's in Luke 2. And his mother, can you imagine Jim, what your mother would say? You know, I can imagine what my mother would say. She'd say, Chester Wallace Jr. That's the way she'd start. But Mary says, yeah, we're looking for you. And Jesus' response is, why were you searching for me? You're misunderstanding me. You know, don't you understand? I was supposed to be in my Father's house. We've talked about this, Mom and Dad. Don't you get it? You know, the tension in their family. There was tension in their family. And here's the way it was portrayed in The Chosen.
Please, I'm in your room. My son, he's with me.
Get over it. Jerusalem.
No, we came for the Passover feast before he was in heaven.
This is 3 years ago.
Jesus! Jesus!
Hey.
Emma?
I love that line, if not now, when? You know, about the timing of it all. And so, you know, there was tension in the family. And we'll read a little bit more about this in a little bit. But think about Jesus' first miracle. What was it?
Changing water into wine.
Remember that story? And, you know, there is real tension here. You know, the mother says, you know, the wine's gone. They have no more wine. And what's Jesus? So Mary sort of, you know, I sort of get them, you know, if it was my mother, she'd have her wooden spoon, you know, like this. You know, they have no more wine. And what's Jesus say?
Why do you involve
woman. He says woman.
It's not like mom. He doesn't say mom.
You know, that's right. He doesn't say mom. He says woman. And you say, oh, well, you know, that's just a translation. No, it's a very short, curt word. He's saying, look, lady, it's not my time. And then she responds, she turns around. She just doesn't, she's not gentle, Mary, meek and mild. You know, she's a strong woman. So she turns around and says to these guys, okay, whatever he says, do it. And I love that because those are the last recorded words of Mary in the Bible. If you have anybody, you have any friends who think Mary is a really big deal, say, I agree. That'll probably shock them. I agree. And I'm following the last recorded words of Mary in the Bible. Do whatever Jesus says. That's my life. And so she paints him in a corner, doesn't he? Doesn't she? Okay, do whatever he says. She didn't ask permission. She didn't go up to Jesus and say, now I'm going to go over here and I'm going to tell these people to do. No, she just turned and went. Did your parents ever commit you to do something before you agreed to it? Did you ever commit your family to do things before talking it through? You know, we have moved 7 times. Not all of them were, oh boy, this would be a great opportunity. No, it's like, well, I lost the job and I gotta go find one, and this is where the next job was. You know, we wound up, I'll never forget, we were in Connecticut, and my job wasn't going well. They had just moved. My office was now over the Tappan Zee Bridge. It was really far away. It was a pain. So I was looking to get another job, and I found one in Scottsdale, Arizona. You know, just around the block. And, you know, I come home, and Marianne is cooking supper for us. She's great. She's got her wooden spoon, and I don't know what's in that pot, but she's just beating it to death. She is just hammering it with her, and she's crying. And I come up, gentle soul that I am, and I go like this, and she says, "I don't want to talk about it." There was tension in our home. There was tension in the home of Jesus. And if you don't think that's enough, think about these two parts where his family heard about this, about what he was doing, and they came for him. Why?
He's out of his mind.
He's out of his mind. They thought he was out of his mind. You ever have a relative think you were out of your mind?
Yes.
Did you ever think some relative was out of their mind?
Yes.
Yeah, been there, yeah, but I got that one. And, you know, so the family, you know, this was not one of these ministries where the father and the mother and the sons and the daughters and the in-law, you know, that everybody's on staff. No. They didn't agree. They couldn't figure it out. And then later on in John, it says, his brothers did not believe in him. Yes?
I'm sorry, but I got a question. So, Mary knows that she gave birth to Christ.
Right.
I mean, the angels told her, you know, she knows she didn't have sex. Joseph knows. Then how come they, he's the Son of God. How could they think he's out of his mind? They've had to know all along. Did they just forget?
Have we ever forgotten?
Oh.
Have you ever received the promise of God and you know it's true and then go off and live differently?
Yeah.
I think this is, again, another one of those instances that shows these are real people. These are not mannequins. These aren't, you know, robots. Yeah, they went through all of it. They had the promise. Just like us, just like me, I know. Yes?
I was going to say 15 or 16 years have gone by that time, and I'm sure that this is, he has not indicated, at least biblically, that he's done anything for ministry up until that point. So it would probably be pretty easy for them to forget.
It could be. Some people, the Bible is silent, and so when the Bible is silent, it's shut up, okay? But some people have put together what I think is an interesting idea. Okay, I will only say it's an idea. I can't prove it's true. But you notice we have Mary and Joseph together right at the birth. And then they come back from Egypt. We got Mary and Joseph. And then we have Mary and Joseph when he's 12 at the scene that we saw in Jerusalem, right? Joseph disappears from the record, from the history. It's like he's not there. But Mary is there all along. She's there. And then she's also there in the book of Acts, in the upper room when they pray on Pentecost. So people say, well, what happened to Joseph? Some people think, and it sort of makes sense, but again, I can't prove it, that Joseph died sometime after that trip to Jerusalem for Passover. That Joseph died. And this is one of the reasons they say Jesus didn't start his ministry earlier, because he had to stay because he was the eldest son. He was responsible for taking care of Mary and the family. So, whatever, you know, he was a carpenter. It doesn't mean just working with wood. It could also mean stone. That he was somehow, he was engaged and responsible for the family up to the point he was 30 years old, and that's when his ministry started. So can't prove any of that. Makes a lot of sense. But, you know, and during, there are, you know, the record is silent. But Jesus, you know, was in a family. And even though he was and is perfect, can you imagine living with somebody who's perfect? Anything that happens, it's never them. You know. But so thank you for the great question. So, and then, you know, so we have, he's got problems with his family. And he's got problems in his ministry is messy. He goes back to his town. He tells them that he's the Messiah. And what do they want to do? Throw him off a cliff. Doesn't sound like he's, you know, very popular. You know, he said the truth. And what was their response? Get rid of him. Throw him off a cliff. And so, and he's going through his ministry. His ministry was not moving from one cloud to another, from one mountaintop to another. He was exhausted. It was hard work. Because why else? Remember, they go out onto the Sea of Galilee and a storm comes up and the disciples are freaking out. And where's Jesus?
Sleeping.
He's asleep in the back of the boat. Let me tell you, you got a small boat in a storm, you got to be dog tired to be sleeping through that. He wasn't pretending to be asleep to test their faith. He was gone, physically exhausted, emotionally gone. This is a messy life. And people didn't believe him. He kept doing what? One miracle after another, after another, after another. Did people believe on him? No. And Jesus gets frustrated. You ever get frustrated? Don't raise your hand. But, you know, you ever get frustrated? Does Jesus understand frustration? You betcha. Because he says, you unbelieving and perverse generation. Here's the frustration. How long shall I stay with you? Have you ever said these words? How long will I put up with you? Or maybe somebody said that to you. How long am I going to put up with you? You know, my mom and dad, you know, had that memorized. Because if I, you know, if I had been a kid today, I would have been, you know, in the school psychiatrist's office every other day. I would have been drugged to death. You know, I would have been a zombie because I was hyperactive like you wouldn't believe. You know, this is mild, right? And so, but back then, I was, you know, like that. And they were frustrated. They would get frustrated. I remember my mom just looked and said, how long am I going to have to put up with you? Now, you never said that. You knew never said that. And Jesus also, the pain of losing Lazarus. And what does he do? He weeps. He weeps. And when he it says when he calls to Lazarus, what did he say? He said, Lazarus, come out. And just so you know, it wasn't like this. Lazarus, would you mind coming out, please? No, he yells, he screams because he's so angry at death. And he it's a command and it's a yelling. It's like what a wild animal screams. It's like how he yelled. He had a messy life. And then he's in the Garden of Gethsemane. Talk about messy. My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow. Boy, is that a messy life? He's so upset. He's so distraught. And being in anguish. He's in anguish. What's anguish?
Frustration.
It's fear.
Overcome.
It's like a tsunami has come over him of he knows what's coming. He knows what's coming. And it's not just the physical, which is awful, but that he's going to take on the sin of us all. And how distasteful that would be to him. And he's in the garden, and then what happens? He's betrayed, right? He's betrayed by a close friend. He's arrested. He's abandoned by his closest friends. You ever been there? You ever been abandoned by your friends? Jesus gets it. And then he goes to a rigged trial. You know, this was not an episode of Perry Mason or Law and Order or Blue Bloods. We're trying to find the truth. They could care less about the truth. They just wanted to get rid of this troublemaker. And that, boy, that sounds like a messy life, doesn't it? Yeah. I don't know if you ever thought of it. I was like, wow, his life really was messy. And the answer is, the question is, so what? What's the big deal? You know, the big deal is that God knows the beginning from the end. And he didn't walk away or turn away from a messy life. He didn't say what many of the people would say to you and me today is, now, God wants to save you, but before he saves you, you've got to fix yourself up. You've got to make yourself presentable to God. You've got to achieve so many things. You got to do this. You got to live a certain way. God came to save people who were in a mess. He did that. That's why it's so important that God accepts messy people. He loves on messy people. Remember the son who got his inheritance early, left, threw it away, and comes back? He had lived what? A messy life. And what's the father do? Runs after him, takes off after him, hugs him, welcomes him, loves on him. That's the heart of God. You see, God's not limited to use only good things, only to use positive things. And I think the best example I can use of this are Legos. Okay? There was a guy, his name was Ole Kirk Christensen. He was a carpenter, and he came up with this. He went overseas to work, and he saved his money. He then came back home, and he got married and took the money he saved and bought a carpentry shop. And he started doing what carpentry people do. You know, they do carpentry stuff. And then in 1932, he said, you know what? I can make these blocks, these wooden blocks, that you can build stuff with. What an idea. It's great. His children were playing one day in the carpenter shop, and they were playing with, you know, when you plane, you know, you take the plane and the little pieces of wood come off. They were playing with that. And they decided to, they were cold, so they made a fire with that stuff. Guess what happened? The place burned down. So he borrows some money, and he builds bigger. He builds bigger. And so he then, you know, the company's starting to make these wooden bricks that fit together. And somebody came up with the idea in 1947 about using plastic. And everybody went, oh, poo-poo on plastic. I mean, it's really craftsmen, right, to use wood, right? I mean, plastic, you inject it, it's, you know, there's no skill or anything, you know. But they started to sell this stuff. They started selling these plastic things. Well, then that factory burned down. Okay? And so they build an even bigger factory. Okay? They build this bigger factory. And things are going along well. They're selling the wooden blocks and they're selling the plastic blocks. Until the third factory burns down. And when that third factory burned down, they lost 100% of all the wooden blocks that they were going to be selling. And it was a family-owned business. What do? They did out of the ashes of this, they decided three fires is enough, okay? We're going to go to plastic. Now, not everybody liked it. Some of the family members said, you guys are stupid, and we're going to go off and we'll do wood. And they said, fine. They started to do plastic only. And that was how that's how it all started. It wasn't one success after another. It was one fire after another, after another. And there was even family arguments about it. And now, they're a $9 billion company. $9 billion in sales, with no end in sight. And they bought Cypress Gardens and made it into Legoland, so they gotta be good, right? You see, we think, well, if there's problem and if there's pain and there's failure, God can't be in it. God can't use that. But he does. He was willing to use that in my life, because my life is messy. And I assume your life has a little bit of mess somewhere in it, here and there. But, you know, our lives are messy, but some of that mess comes, you know, we talked about different kinds of messes, right? Some of it is thrown on us, and some of that mess we throw on ourselves. It's like these people in a beach in Florida. They're swimming. And as they're swimming with the sharks. And not everybody's coming in. You know, it's one thing to be out there and see a shark and say, I'm out of here, right? It's another thing to say, oh, well, that's okay. We were over in Vero Beach, and we're just, you know, hanging out, and I'm under an umbrella with SPF 5000 smeared all over me, and Marianne's looking for shells, and all of a sudden, the lifeguard blows the whistle, calls everybody in. They didn't see sharks, but they saw all of these minnows. And what's wrong with minnows? Food! Lunchtime! Yum, exactly. So they pulled everybody out. Why? Because that's the smart thing to do. That's the wise thing to do. And yet sometimes we stay. Oh, would you please? You're so kind. Thank you. You know, it's... We walk into it. I walk into it. And yet, even when we go through the deep waters of life, God says, when you go through the deep waters and great, not just the deep waters, but trouble, what does God say? I will be with you. It doesn't say, I'll send you a text. He doesn't say, I'll send you a postcard. He doesn't say, I'll send you somebody else. What does he say? He himself will be with us. I will be with you. When you go through rivers of difficulty, you will not drown. When you walk through the fire of oppression, you will not be burned up. The flames will not consume you. That's the promise of God.
Doesn't mean we don't have to go through them. It just means we're going to have a little bit through them.
He's going to go through it with us together. And doesn't mean that there's not pain involved. But there is an assurance that we will be with him for all eternity. And that even if there is minor inconvenience and pain here, there's something better ahead. Better days are ahead. It's like the old hymn. When through deep waters I call thee to go, the rivers of sorrow shall not overflow. For I will be near thee, thy troubles to bless, and sanctify to thee thy deepest distress. When through fiery trials thy pathway shall lie, my grace all sufficient will be thy supply. The flame shall not hurt thee, I only design thy dross to consume, thy gold to refine. Some of us, and I'm raising my hand, I'm in this category. I'm stubborn. I need really hot flames, okay, to get rid of my dross, okay? I really do. But God still is with me. He's still with you. And God loves to use people who have messy lives. He loves it. It's like this messy life, okay? This is just a picture of a messy kid, but I want to tell you a story about Cornelia. She had a really messy life. I mean, ugh, I just can't imagine. She grew up in a family, she's part of the family business, and you know, life is good. She's engaged to be married. At the last minute, the guy says, I've got a gig on the Bachelor show. And so he calls it off and immediately goes and marries somebody else. Can you imagine the heartbreak? She could have said, just pulled the covers over her head and said, I'm done. But she didn't. She was devastated, but she didn't let that stop her. That was a disappointment. Nobody else came forward to show interest. She was a single woman the rest of her life. But God used her. She started helping disabled children, children with mental capacity problems, and then people who were in trouble who needed a place to stay, she helped them. Through a series of events, she loses her family. Her mother dies early, her father dies in quick succession. Her father dies, her brother dies, and her sister dies. And now she's all alone in the world. She could have just curled up in a ball. She could have just said, I'm done with life. Don't bother me. I'm just going to go hide somewhere. But she didn't. She worked with the government and took a prison and converted that prison into a place for homeless people, where homeless people could come and find shelter. She then started telling her story to anybody who would listen. By the end of her life, she had spoken in 64 countries. She didn't write her first book until she was 62. And before her death on her 91st birthday, she wrote 18 more. We know her as Corrie Ten Boom. We know her. She refused to listen to the messed up message of the enemy. All this bad stuff has fallen on me. I'm not worthy. I can't be used. She said, no, I'm not going to believe the lie. God is so deep. He is deeper still than any problem, any cave, any hole that she would fall into. And she talks about her time in the prison camps, in the concentration camps, and said, God put me through that. It wasn't that, oh, those stinking Germans. No, she said, Jesus put me there. Can you imagine going through that and saying, that was the hand of God. Christ died for her, and she knew it, and she wanted to use that. She trusted God through all of that mess. All of that mess in her life. That's why Hebrews says, let us approach the throne of grace with just a little bit of confidence. Fullest confidence that we can receive mercy for our failures. Anybody need their cup filled when it gets empty with failures? God says, I'm going to fill it with mercy and grace to help in the hour of need. Fullest confidence. It's time to live with fullest confidence. That doesn't mean life is perfect. That doesn't mean there's not going to be problems. Your life's going to be messy, okay? We live in a broken world, so if you don't think it's going to be messy, I got some swamp land I want to sell you, okay? It ain't happening. So the question is, grace for the help in our hour of need. God's kindness, it will be there. We got to just say, here I am. There's an old hymn that says, no condemnation now I dread. Jesus and all in him is mine. Alive in him, my living head, and robed in righteousness divine. Bold I approach the eternal throne and claim the crown through Christ my own. That boldness isn't because, you know, we're special. That boldness is because you are a child of the Most High God. You are his, in Christ, you are his son or you're his daughter. You might say, I am unworthy. You're right. But that doesn't change the fact. We're unworthy. But that doesn't change the fact that he's our father. George was talking about fear of the Lord. One great definition I heard of fear of the Lord is to say, if God is as smart as he says he is, if he's as powerful as he says he is, if he's all-knowing as he says he is, and he knows the end from the beginning, then what's stopping me from going along for the ride with him? Giving up my own desires to say, I want to do it this way. But God says, I got a better way. Didn't say it was going to be easy. Didn't say it wasn't going to be messy. I think about Rick Warren, who I deeply love and respect and admire. Had a 25-year-old son commit suicide. Had all sorts of problems. And yet, he stayed faithful. He's no different than you and me. Will we be faithful? Will we have that full confidence? Let's have that full confidence. And let us encourage one another to have full confidence. I have a friend in a small group who's on Thursday going to be going in for some surgery. Let's just say it's delicate surgery. And yet, how does he approach it? Does he approach it with fear? What am I going to do if it doesn't work? What am I going to do if they do something wrong? Or is he going to say, I'm walking into this with full confidence. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the surgeon is good, but my confidence is in God Most High. I'm going to let him take care of it because Jesus died so that we could have that. Would you pray with me? Our Father and our God, I'm so grateful that you are with us here today. I'm so thankful that Christ died. And I'm really, really grateful that you gave yourself. You came into a messy world, and you didn't live in a bubble. You lived with messy people. So you know what it's like. Thank you that we can run to you with our mess, and you receive us, accept us, and walk through life with our mess. Change us, O God, in Jesus' name. Amen.